KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin. You got, oh man, Corey Majors. And of course, you have the famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. We got Cowboys questions that matter, but how are y'all doing?
Feeling strong today, Kevin. Feeling very strong. Yesterday was leg day, and then this morning was like a cardio day. And so legs are feeling really strong today. So I'm happy.
Would you like to invite people up to feel them?
If you would like to come up and feel my legs, you're more than welcome to. That is not a suggestion. It's just, it's an open invitation, I guess, from Kevin.
Which feels like a suggestion.
Yeah, but it doesn't it feel, I don't want to like creep people out by, you know, like this is you. I'm not telling you feel my legs or else.
That was off air.
This is, no, I didn't tell anybody off air to just touch my legs. I never said that. But you said, do you want to touch Corey's legs? That's what's
to Alec.
To Alec. And Alec was like, he's like, I got things to do right now. I got to get the show started.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get the show started then. Will the Dallas Cowboys, we'll get to the Rangers in a minute. We flip-flopped the order of this because, you know, you saw what happened. Will the Dallas Cowboys average more than 23.5 points per game this season? That is what they're predicted at, 399.5 yards per game, which is tied for 15th, which, Corey, as you like to say, is just
right
about
in the middle,
and average 23.5 points per game. Can they do better than that? Because I feel like that will lead to a very mediocre season.
Do they need an exceptional season, though?
I mean, as
353 feels low.
As a long-suffering Cowboys fan, yes.
Okay.
399.5 yards
okay,
and 23.5 points.
Gotcha. That does feel low for a team that has George Pickens, CeeDee Lamb, the potential with Jaden Blue. It has
and a quarterback that finished second for MVP.
A couple of years ago. So it does feel a little low, but I think they can, Kevin. I think they can do this.
Alec, can the team average more than 23.5 points per game? Maybe a good little bit more.
Also, by the way, real quick, Alec, 23, like that's a good number for a defense that I think can hold them under 23. I think this defense is good enough to hold.
And if that becomes the case, we can switch the conversation for sure.
It's tough. Because I do believe in this offense with some of the moves that they made. I seriously do think that the vertical element of George Pickens alone is going to lend itself to more points being scored, whether it's him doing the scoring or not. I'd say, yeah, I think they can. And to Corey's point, if the defense can get stops, that's just putting the ball in the offense's hands more. And then you got the weapon that is Brandon Aubrey. So you're going to get at least 3 points on any drive that you get near midfield, in my mind. So I'd say, yeah, I think it's okay to go a little bit north of that.
All right, now I'm going to throw out a preview question. So maybe you look at the schedule, maybe you consider. Will the Cowboys have a winning streak of more than 2.5 games this season? And remember, all these are set at a half to make sure you don't get an endless slew of ties. So
it has to be 3
correct
to be a winning streak anyway.
Correct.
Otherwise, it's just back-to-back wins.
That's a good point. So I guess I can restructure the question. Will the Cowboys win at least 3 consecutive games at some point?
I think they will.
Season?
I think there's a place somewhere.
Oh,
but here's
I agree.
The thing. Here's the thing about the Cowboys. When you expect them to win 3 in a row, they lose one in the middle.
Right.
When you don't expect them to win 3 in a row, you're like, there's no way you can win 1 of 3.
Right.
They're like, no, we'll show. They're ridiculous in that way.
Go ahead.
So that irritates me. So I think that's one of the reasons I think they can.
I'm not saying this will definitely happen, but I think if you look at the schedule, once you get past Philly, there's a potential to go on a winning streak, perhaps a lengthy winning streak, which you're probably going to need to do because the back half of the schedule is significantly more difficult than the front half of the schedule. But I could also see a scenario in which the Cowboys lose to the Jets and the Panthers and then beat the Commanders and the Broncos, and you're like, the hell just happened? How did we do that?
We have no clue how Schottenheimer will manage success or failure. So that's another factor in that. How does he keep them focused when things are going good? Because to get a three-game win streak, that's almost a month right there.
Yeah.
And you got to be in a different mindset to continue to say, you know what, that wasn't good enough last week. Let's be better this week.
Alec, can the Cowboys win at least three straight, obviously, regular season games? I already know the answer to the other one.
Oh, and Corey's exactly right, because it's going to be the second that I count them out. It's going to be the second that I'm just like, it's over.
Right.
The season is chalked. We are done. It's okay. First year head coach. I'm going to start coping. The second I start coping is when they're going to just inject a little bit of hope rather than cope. And then I'm going to be back in. And man, I hate it.
There's another example right there. You lose on the road against the Raiders and you're like, well, we're done. And then you go home and beat Philly. Mm-hmm. And you're like, this team makes no sense whatsoever. I could see that. I think I do believe they can win three straight. Look, not everybody agrees with me on this. I think the beginning of their schedule is so freaking soft. And I know you play Philly on the road to start the season. I get that. But after that, host the Giants, on the road against the Bears, host the Packers, on the road against the Jets, on the road against Carolina. All five of those are definitely winnable games.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that they're going to start off the season 5-1, but I kind of am in the opinion of they need to start the season at least 4-2, or you can see this thing go off the rails pretty quick.
Yeah, and again, I'm sure, here, let me give you my Steven real quick. Anything could happen to any of those other teams. We never know 8 games into the season where the other teams are going to be.
Right.
So we could have a huge advantage on those teams. They could lose most of their team.
You know what, Alec?
A sickness of some sort.
If you could pull over, not right now, but if you could pull over those Stephen Jones cuts, because he said something that I want to adopt in my real life, where it's like 90% of what you just said is factually inaccurate. And then Dawson followed up with what specifically is inaccurate. He goes, I'm not going to get into that. That is something I want to adopt in my real life. It's like you have a fight with your significant other. You're like, 90% of what you just said is inaccurate. Which parts? I don't really want to get into that.
Yeah,
right,
if I
now
get into that, you're just, we'll be here for days.
Yeah. And we're just not going to do that.
Here's my example of Steven. Where do you stop to get gas, Steven? And he's like, gasoline is all over the country. And you never know exactly when you're going to need to stop, because what is stopping? And who knows how many different places you can pass before you actually... A lot of people out there need gas. And so do I want gas when they're getting gas, or do I want gas whenever they're not? And so you have to ask yourself that question, and you got to be prepared. 24 hours, 365.
No, but I asked you the question. Where did you get the gas?
To get gasoline. Well, I'm not going to talk about that right now. That's not fair to the gasoline industry.
That last part, actually, that sounds about right. All right. Can Dak return to his MVP caliber form? I don't know if you guys heard this, but a couple of years ago, Dak Prescott finished second for the MVP. I don't know if you've heard that. I don't know if the team has ever said that or not, but he did finish second. Do you believe he could return to MVP caliber form?
Okay. I don't have him there. But Tony Romo's best year, I think, in my personal opinion, was the year that he said, I'm just going to play the offense.
Right.
Instead of try to be the gunslinger. And we thought that that dude could be MVP that year. Aaron Rodgers just happened to have a ridiculous touchdown interception ratio that year. And I believe that's when he won it. But Tony Romo was fantastic because the team needed exactly the way he played.
Agreed.
And so
agreed specifically with the way you said that.
I think you could have like a 29-9 type of season and be like, that's not spectacular.
But that's what you needed.
But man, he played within the offense. It was balanced. It was good. And that's that Romo season was so good. And again, that's the Dez Cottit season, I believe. And his accuracy numbers were through the roof. So that's what I would like. And you hear Schottenheimer talking about Dak playing under center a little bit more. And they discuss that a little bit more. And you're seeing it out in practice. And that kind of sets up for the play action, the balance that you've been pointing out for the last couple of years, that Dak's so good with play action.
Absolutely.
So that's where I think that maybe he'll be in that conversation, but the numbers won't be so huge that you're just like, that's look what Lamar did last year. This is compared to it.
This one is a little tricky, and this might be because just some of the early stuff we saw. I thought Javonte Williams looked good yesterday. Broadus was talking about Miles Sanders. Who is a greater potential disappointment for the Cowboys, Jaden Blue or Javonte Williams? Because I feel like a lot of people have put a lot on Jaden Blue as a fifth-round draft pick. Not to say that he can't be good, but the way people talk about him, it sounds like he was the first pick in the second round.
Interesting. Yeah, no, you got a good point there. I have a lot weighing on him.
And that's why I think it's Blue, because I feel like people are maybe significantly more optimistic about Jaden Blue than they are Javonte Williams.
I have Javonte Williams as just like the, not bell cow, but he would be that version of, he's going to get the first and second snap carries. That's my mind. And then Miles Sanders would be the next guy. And okay, third down situations, you can get him in the flats. You can do some special things with him there. But I feel like Jaden Blue has the better potential to give you a bolt.
Okay.
Than Miles Sanders maybe. Because a 70-yard run is in his, like, that's in his character. And so that's where I feel like probably Jaden Blue's the most likely to let me down this year. And he's a rookie. My expectations might be too high for a rookie also. So Javonte Williams, though, I feel like I'm going to get exactly what I think out of him. Blue, I could get more. I could get a lot less.
I know everybody is levying these expectations on Blue. I never have, and I won't.
Okay.
I'm not allowing myself to in his rookie season because, exactly like you said, fifth-round draft pick. I should not have to expect much from him. But then again, that's what this team does, is they rely heavily on their draft picks to make early impacts. So for me, the way I look at it is they went into the draft saying this is going to be a veteran backfield. They telegraphed to us that this is going to be a veterans group. Yep. This is going to be an experienced group. Whether you like it or not as a fan, this is what we're rolling with as our two guys. It's going to be Sanders. It's going to be Williams. So the fact that they were really touting that this offseason, saying we're fine going into the draft with these guys, it's Williams for me because he is the veteran guy. He is the guy that they wanted us to accept. And they kept on telling us, and he's telling us himself, that he's back to pre-ACL tear form. So if he doesn't look like old Javonte Williams, I'm personally going to be disappointed.
All right. I got one more for you, if that's okay, because I want to see if there's a generational divide on this.
All right.
And we're going to do it a little different on this one.
Look, this is your last day before you head off to another world, basically. So
that's true, I guess. Who is the greatest head coach in Dallas Cowboys history?
Man.
I saved that one for last. Because, again, I want to see if that's kind of divided. If you want to put your age along with your answer, I think that could be fascinating.
Innovation-wise, I mean, he helped change the game completely, and that's Tom Landry.
He developed the flex defense.
The short period of time success is Jimmy Johnson, no matter what. And Jimmy Johnson will tell you, I couldn't coach there for 15 years. Right. I would have destroyed everybody's souls. I'm going to go with Jimmy Johnson for the simple fact that I feel like that's somebody that I'd follow that dude through anything, and I'd battle for him, and he would convince me of it. He would make me feel, if I'm not doing it, he's making me feel like I'm a chump and I need to get off the field. But if I'm running, that dude's making me feel like I'm unstoppable. And I just feel like the psychology of it all is a big deal. So I'll go with him. That's a fun question, though.
I start thinking about the conversations that we have whenever we power rank NBA players and stuff all the time.
It's tough.
Is what's one thing that comes up whenever you talk about Kobe and Rodman and some of those guys is cultural impact and their impact on the game itself, rather than just looking at career totals and championships and whatnot. So whenever I think like that and I try to be fair in both sports, that points me towards Landry,
yeah,
because of his impact on the game itself. But it is so hard to deny ring talk and overall success. I got to go Landry, though.
Okay. From the 903, Landry, they're 46. From the 214, Landry, 38. From the 817, they're 31. duh. It's Jimmy Johnson from the 785. Jimmy Johnson from the 972. Jimmy Johnson is the GOAT from the 817. Tom Landry, age 60. It's interesting that you mentioned the cultural impact, because from the fedora to the suit and the tie to pretty much
only... Dude has a statue, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he only needed that one expression to coach you in all of the games. And like I said, I wasn't kidding about that. Originating the flex defense is amazingly revolutionary for the time.
Favorite story about Landry from Roger Staubach is the time that he was supposed to run a play in practice. Tom Landry said, "That's not how you're supposed to do it. You need to do it like this." Tom Landry then ran the rollout, and Roger stepped in and said, "Okay." And then he limped just like Landry did. He said, "I feared for my life after that." And so that's always good to know that, like, you're giving your boss a hard time, but you're also respectfully terrified.
I mean, and it could be a man or a woman, but I think we've all been in a place where you're like, that old person's about to whoop my ass. Like, they might be half a foot shorter than me or whatever, but...
they could just hit this table and crumble because it's old man strength.
Is about to be a reckoning. We're the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, and it does seem like it's trending towards Tom Landry, because Tom Landry seems to cross over more ages.
Yeah.
Because what I have not seen is like a slew of 60-year-olds who say Jimmy Johnson, but I have seen multiple people late 20s, early 30s who are still like, it's going to be Tom Landry.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
We're the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo, live from Oxnard on 105.3 The Fan. KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan right now on the Wild Fork Foods hot seat in Oxnard, wildforkfoods.com. Elite game day grilling favorites. It is our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We are good.
We're safe.
Yes, we are safe. Were you worried about the tsunami potentially yesterday?
I was going to ask, did you guys have a hard time sleeping worrying about us last night?
Absolutely.
Yeah, if it would have been the day before when you got Tyler Guyton injured, then I would have slept fine. But yesterday I was concerned.
Yeah, there was a lot of warnings here. I guess it was an advisory, technically.
How do you normally deal with that? Like, do you get concerned straight away, or are you somebody who's like, you're resolved and it's going to be fine until the last minute? And you're like,
you know,
okay.
I did turn on CNN and kind of monitored the guy that was reporting the news from Hawaii, and you know, and the advisory kept going in the crawl there, and you know, Ventura County came up, and it was like, okay, I'm on the second floor. I should be good, but there are four floors to the hotel, and I said, if we need to, we'd just go up the steps.
That's good. That's a good plan.
You know, they were, the people at the hotel were, you know, cognizant of what was going on, because I said something to them at the front desk, and they go, "Oh yeah, we'll let you know." I said, "Okay,
they've
good."
Been through this, right?
And that's like, you know, when you've lived at a place for a while and you understand, like living in Texas, you're like, "No, yeah, 100 degrees, it's going to happen. Don't worry about it." You explain to the Northerners how it's going to be, and that's how it is out there. They were explaining, "We'll work you through it, man."
That's, but you know what? Kind of raised your eyebrows was the fact that, you know, I'm sure people in the Hill Country were used to having flash flood.
Yep. That's a good point.
That's true.
Yeah.
And so
that is a really good point.
And last night on the news, I mean, you know what happens when we have tornado warnings, right?
Yeah.
The half hour news was about the tsunami, and you know, they didn't have really, and they had to bring up 2022, by the way, when they did get some tidal waves from a tsunami out in the Pacific. But that was the best that they can show, because there was no damage yet in Hawaii. So, it was about 15, 20 minutes of weather last night.
Man, that's scary. I'm glad everyone is okay. I meant to ask you about this at the end of last week. I saw, you know, Charles Haley will be out there. Nate Newton will be out there. But I also saw them both kind of start to get into their stances and look like they were going to rerun some training camp drills from days gone by. Is that something you frequently see, and how much do you kind of want to see more of that? Like, they stop short of just quite locking up, but it definitely looked like numerous times they were ready to like start running some drills.
Go after each other?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit too old to be going after each other.
Don't think that though, right?
But, you know, I'm sure maybe they had the attention of, you know, some of the younger players, and they kind of were demonstrating things the way, you know, Nate on our podcast, stop me if I told you this already, had said stuff about Guyton, things he needed to get better at, what things he needed to do. And like a day or two later, Guyton came up to him in practice and said, hey, I heard what you said about me. You know, when somebody says that, it's usually not good, right? They're going to be defensive. And he said, I was really interested in the pointers you were giving me. And if you got anything else to help me out with, don't hesitate to come up and talk to me. How about that?
Dude, that's really
awesome.
That's
what you want to hear.
That's smart, yeah. Too, right? Especially with a dude that has Super Bowls under his belt, to just be like, hey, I want to pick at your brain now that I know you're watching me.
And six Pro Bowl appearances, too. People forget about that, about Nate. Six Pro Bowls as a guard. So, although John Mannen probably had a lot to do with that.
I can see that.
But anyway, you know, he was pretty darn good. And so, and he does not go out of his way to approach current players. He keeps his distance, but if they come up to him, he'll be more than glad to talk to them.
I like that. The other day, Schottenheimer talked a little bit about Dak playing more under center. And I was kind of curious if you've noticed any more of that than typical, and how that might affect the offense and what their plans are.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pay a little bit more attention to that. And the reason it came up in my mind yesterday, I was talking with somebody about Milton, and it just kind of said, you know, I got to pay attention. I wonder how much he's ever played under center.
Yeah.
Because he probably didn't do much of that at Tennessee, right? And he didn't hardly play. I mean, he played one game at New England. So I was going to kind of keep an eye on how he's, because I can remember when some of these young quarterbacks came in and they're in college and they never went under center. I remember, and this is going way back, Quincy Carter, they kind of had to teach him to take a snap under center, right? Like how to hold his hands and everything. Spending time do that, let alone running plays or, you know, your steps or your throwing technique, they start from scratch, taking snaps under center. And a lot of these guys just don't do that. And the other thing, and I think it might have been Clayton Adams yesterday pointed out that, you know, these kids come out of college and they're used to seeing signs for the plays, right? And now you got to hear it and you got to know it, you know, and it's a whole different world than what they've been in college, because it's easier even defensively to make defensive changes because they just hold up a sign, right? And then, okay, you know what to do. But here it's a little bit different.
Is there any particular position, because we've asked you quite a bit about cornerback, and I think that's understandable. Even the Cowboys understand that they're making moves with Kalen Carson being out for a while. Are there any other particular positions that you're specifically intrigued to watch, maybe for depth purposes, maybe for starter purposes, whatever reason, that you've been more focused on in practice than perhaps other spots?
I think the guys inside on defense, the defensive tackles. You know, is Mozzie Smith looking like he's improving? What Solomon Thomas still have? Their seventh-round draft choice, Jay Toya, can he offer something? And maybe not even just inside the defensive ends. What's Sam Williams doing after not playing for an entire year or having pads on for an entire year? Is Izuruku, you know, the real deal? He seems to be, and is he able to like hold the edge against the run? I think Peyton Turner, it's like, why? This guy was a first-round draft choice, and he never really did anything with the Saints. And, you know, could that be a reclamation project that he gets a new spot? And let's see with, you know, what this guy's capable of doing. So I think the defensive line front, and it was interesting yesterday when interviewing Matt Eberflus, and one of the questions came up about stopping the run. And, you know, the first thing he said was teamwork, and then he repeated it, teamwork. And the defenses he's been on in the NFL, starting with the Cowboys, going on to Indianapolis and the Bears, the defenses he's been a part of, not as a coordinator, but a position coach, then a coordinator, then a head coach, have been pretty darn good. And so that's one thing that if this team's going to be successful defensively, and I think we know this, they got to be able to stop the run. And the last two years that they had losing seasons, 20, and then this past year against the run, they finished 29th and 31st. Now, I don't know if that's a coincidence, but that's what happened. So if you look at the Cowboys' success or non-success in the playoffs, it always came down to their inability to stop the run. These last, you know, the Dak Prescott era. So Eberflus has been pretty good at coordinating defense. Now, can he do it with this bunch, and does he have the talent to be able to do it?
So on the talent front, one of the people I've been intrigued by is Dante Fowler. I know Dante Fowler is better known as a pass rusher, but
right.
Early indications are he's gotten better against the run. Now, how much better? I'm curious your take on all of that, or it's a work in progress and I can't actually tell until Philadelphia.
Yeah, and I think that with him, to me, he's a rotational player. I think he maybe last year with Washington played like 50% of the snaps.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's the starter that's going to be out there for 60 snaps a game, right? It's kind of a rotation, and depending on what they're trying to do on defense or what they're down in distance they're facing. Stopping the run, I don't know, you know, and they're thumping up, but they're not tackling except for Malik Hooker, I mean. Jeez, he was just bringing it the other day. I don't know what got into him. But, that's got to be one thing. If you're going to play defensive end, you got to be able to set the edge. And so we'll see that now. If they can get the pass rush from him, you know, you can be a designated pass rusher. And,
sure.
You know, and he's been pretty good at that. So he's another one of those guys you're watching, and it's like, okay, how are they playing the run? And that's a big deal. Same for Sam Williams. You know, when he came out of Ole Miss, he was kind of a pass rusher. And I still had some friends that were Ole Miss fans, and they said he can rush the quarterback. He's got to be better playing the run. He was almost like a one-dimensional thing. But he's kind of rebuilt his body. He looks stronger. He's bigger. Now, can he kind of get back in the groove after, you know, the other day was the first time he had pads on since, you know, I think he got hurt before the pads came on last year.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is probably why he trucked somebody without pads on.
Yeah,
that first
right?
Day.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, okay, let's go, you know. And so that's going to be a key thing, how they play that. And when Eberflus was talking about it, he goes, you know, when we're talking about the stopping the run, it's and everybody focuses on the defensive tackles, right? He said all 11 guys. He goes, you know, if we're going to be good against the run, the cornerbacks have to tackle.
Right.
And so that's a pretty good, you know, putting that out there for those guys that and he used a phrase that Rod Marinelli taught him when he was both with the Cowboys. He said on defense, there's no guests out there. And I thought, okay,
I
like that. Yeah. And so, yeah, there's going to be a priority, I think, to stop the run, and we'll see what his scheme like. His scheme's more Marinelli than it had been the last couple of years. It's more of attack, not try to hold up the line and just stop it. So they want Mozzie on the move. I don't know if that's his game, but if he can't do it, he may not be out there. We're past first round draft choice, right?
Right.
Now you got to produce. You don't get a pass there to say, well, he's the first round draft choice. He's got to be out there. You got to get out there and be able to do something and play. And you know, the poor guy gets here and then, you know, they draft him because he was a big stud in the middle that held down double teams. And then he lost weight so he could be a guy to get up the field. And then last year it was, well, we want you to hold down the fort. And now this year it's, well, we want you to get up the field. So his weight has fluctuated. I think Schottenheimer said maybe 310, which it's probably a good weight for him. He lost too much his rookie year. He was like 280, 285, you know, and then last year it was 325, and now he's 310. So we'll see what he can do. So go back to answer your question, that defensive line, that defensive front, because if the defensive front doesn't play well, then your linebackers can't play well.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's something that I think is to keep an eye on, especially next week when they get that scrimmage against the Rams and then the first preseason game.
Thank you very much, good sir. We'll catch up with you again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good. See you guys.
There you go. Mickey Spagnola, DallasCowboys.com. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets. Are you ready for the most attended MLB game in history? Plus, return of the Rangers legends. Next on The Fan.
There's a shot in the right. Back at the track. At the wall. Hamilton has gone deep. And it's 9-7 Texas here in the 10th.
And that's how you know that Joe Buck was biased in that World Series. Because listen to how sad he is that, once again, he thinks that the Rangers are about to win the World Series. We're going to talk about some of those Texas Rangers legends because it's time. Brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement for some Baseball Nuggets. You want to start with the Rangers legends coming back?
I love legends, Kevin. Oh, you know what, though? Yeah. I had some people ask me about one of them.
Oh.
And why they're not as excited as they feel like they should be.
Oh, okay. I'm intrigued by that. So on August 9th, Josh Hamilton will be back and be presented with his Rangers Hall of Fame jacket in an on-the-field ceremony prior to their game against the Phillies. He was inducted into the Rangers Hall of Fame in 2019. He'll also throw out the first pitch. And look, I still think just the ability to close it out in the, I believe it's in the 10th inning of Game 6. If the Rangers, I know what happened before that, but if the Rangers would have closed that out in the 10th and Hamilton's home run would have been the game winner, I do really think that would have changed his kind of general perception here.
You think he would be looked at as the greatest Ranger of all time?
No.
He single-handedly won your World Series.
Don't you feel like Nelson Cruz had a pretty good hand in getting you there?
You saying he single-handedly lost you the World Series?
Okay, I am not saying that. Mm. I think Josh Hamilton is in the mix for sure, and I don't think people hold should have put a ring on it against him so much if that would have happened.
I do remember he was hurt a lot through that playoff stretch. Remember he ran into the fence and then his groin was a problem?
Yeah.
It was like he limped up to the plate to hit that home
run.
He
played like Maris Leofau does with his hair on fire.
I'm going to play center field, and if I'm playing center field, I'm running everywhere and catching everything, and if I have to dive, and that's just how I play.
Yeah.
But again, he limped up to the plate to hit that home run. I had a friend message me yesterday, mm-hmm. mutual friend of ours, mm-hmm. and said, why am I not as excited as I feel I should be for this? And it was all the off-field stuff.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, Kevin, if that had happened, if he'd hit that home run and the World Series was won and all that, if everybody would have just pushed the off-field stuff aside
100%.
And said, don't care.
That is what I think 100%. Because, like, he would have left, and then his wife at the time would have been like, I said it. Then I think we all would have gotten over it because you're like, that's what happened. Listen to it. It sounds just like that.
He's always hated the way she, and we all did, actually.
I hate all of that press conference. She said that she would put a ring on it. I did it. I hated all of that. But if he would have been the guy that would have won you the World Series, you would have gotten over it. Like, I don't think this will happen whatsoever. But, like, if Nathan Eovaldi retired and he's like, I kind of wish the fans would have been a little bit more supportive. You'd be like, oh, damn, man, we loved you. You're our guy. And you won us the World Series.
Yeah, we'd send him cakes and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so you would be willing to forgive a lot more things if, like, they would have won the World Series.
By the way, and I appreciate our friend Derek Holland.
Me too.
You know. Treasure in our hearts anyway. He said, what about Napoli? Go back. We do need to go back and watch that run through that World Series because Napoli was, I mean, and his ankle was like on, it was nothing but rubber bands, and he was still out there just chucking people down and crushing.
And it felt like Napoli was the heartbeat of the fan base.
Yeah. Everybody, you know, I mean, the chants and everything that went along with it. Yeah. That was such a fun team.
It really, you know, really was.
This World Series champion team was fun because of, like, those clutch moments. You know, like, those clutch moments stood out, and then the way they wiped the Astros off the planet. But the...
If only.
Those fans, remember? The ones with
their stupid NASA outfits.
They wanted to just shut those faces down. But that Rangers team from 10-11, John Daniels recently said it. We knew and felt like we were the best.
Yes.
They were a blast. All the personalities were unique and different. This Rangers team has one personality, and then the rest of it's very calm and chill.
Right.
All those guys were so, everybody was different. You had Michael Young, who was this politician in the clubhouse and played it perfectly down the middle. And then you had, you know, Ian Kinsler, who was competitive and had this edge. Derek was fun. Elvis was a blast to watch. All these guys had unique personalities, and that's what made us root for that team. And even Josh Hamilton had his weird thing, but we all kind of wrapped our arms around him and said, we still love you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, I feel like the other two come with less baggage, but... Shin-Soo Chu on August 22nd will throw out the first pitch. The wild thing about that is this is first time back at Globe Life Field in 5 years. So, like, right when the stadium was opening. And then that weekend will also be the Adrian Beltre statue weekend. And so I know people are super pumped about that. So August the 9th for Hamilton, 22nd for Chu, and then the Beltre statue will also be, like, released that night, and then they'll do the ceremony for it the next day. So a lot of, like, cool Rangers nostalgia stuff coming up.
That's great.
Absolutely. All right. Keep an eye out on this. Dylan Cease is a target for the Astros. Now, the good news is Dylan Cease is terrible this year. You can make an argument it is the worst season of his career, but still a thing that could happen. The Blue Jays traded for Sir Anthony Dominguez, and I think what is most fascinating about this is they were in the midst of that series. And so what I think is super fun is you could just, like, all right, so I'm going to go over there now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna take my stuff and go over there. I guess you could have left your Orioles stuff behind and just, you know, like, I'm going to have Blue Jays stuff now. But it is just so wild. Like, I know this.
Was his jersey already ready?
I don't.
Did it have his name on it? Or was it just like, no, it's just a numbered jersey?
I feel like the seamstress or the people who make it were like, you got to give me like an hour. I figure this out. But, like, you don't see this, Corey, you brought this up. You don't see this in other sports where it's like the shocking turn of events after game two. And the Stars have traded Jamie Benn to the Avalanche. Like, they're never playing each other, like, in the middle of it when you see those kind of trades. And that is something that I think is uniquely fun to baseball. Well,
and that's what I've always, like, thought, you know, with even in these basketball games, you're like, this person's being traded. And you're like, why didn't he just, he's literally in a different locker room. Why doesn't he play tonight? You know, like, just get him out there shooting with the team. And in baseball, a lot of times they're like, yeah, he's going to walk over to the other clubhouse and now he's going to be part of this game.
Injuries have picked off a lot of players in the last 24 hours or so. Jacob Wilson is going on the injured list, as is Ronald Acuna, as is Byron Buxton. Like, you're talking about some big name, big money players right there. Now,
especially with this trade deadline up.
Absolutely. You set the template for this years ago. It's going to happen on Saturday. The Speedway Classic. So, I know.
We're still not there, but we're close.
Okay.
Because I feel like a race still needs to happen on the track while the game's going on.
This is on pace to be the highest attended baseball game of all time. What do you think is the previous high attendance for a baseball game?
65,000. I'm just throwing a number.
Sure. 84,587 in 1954. This game has already sold 85,000 tickets, and the game is on Saturday, and it will be the first American or National League game ever played in Tennessee. Fans have purchased tickets from all 50 states, Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, and 9 other countries on 4 continents.
Wow.
For this game. So the Reds and the Braves, and that's one of the things we mentioned about Acuna being out. He will miss this. Obviously, that is one of the huge stars of this series, but Saturday Speedway Classic should be really fun to check out.
Love it.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's do some NFL overreaction or reality right here on The Fan.